Welcome to the GoTo Podcast. Each episode covers the brightest and boldest ideas from the world's leading experts in software development. Tune in for practical lessons, compelling theories, and plenty of inspiration. GoTo gathers the brightest minds in the software community to help developers tackle projects today, plan for tomorrow, and create a better future. Stay up to date with the latest in tech through GoTo's top-rated events held online and in person in cities like Amsterdam, London, Copenhagen, and Chicago, and by subscribing to the GoTo Conferences YouTube channel, where you can find thousands more high-quality dev talks. Learn more at gotopia.tech.
Hello, I'm Lars from the GoTo team, and I'm here at GoTo Copenhagen in person finally. I am joined today by Stefan and Kevlin. So if you wouldn't mind just saying a few words about yourselves so that the audience can get a feeling for who you are. Stefan, maybe you go first.
So I'm Stefan. I do web development now for 10 years and based in Berlin, Germany, and yeah, worked at several startups, and we'll do a rant about web technology today.
Sounds like fun. Kevlin?
My name's Kevlin Henney. I work for myself. Done so for many years, and I help teams through training, workshops, and consultancy kind of improve their development, their perceptions of their architecture, the way that they code. And today I have just done a rant on errors in code, but the kind of failure screens that we see in public, or the failures that affect people in software.
Yes, and that's what I wanted to talk to you today. Is I looked you up online, and you have your name is in the Urban Dictionary. So if you could explain what a Kevlin Henney is.
Yeah. So many years ago, I started taking pictures of failure screens because I thought I'm in software, and I happened, and this was when phones started getting cameras, and so you know you go around, you see, oh, there's a failure screen there. There's a public sign that doesn't. I also noticed this number of times things failed on a browser. You know, here's a web page that's giving me some kind of garbage, and so I started taking screenshots of that, and occasionally I'd include them in a couple of talks, or I'd present them in workshops. In the break I'd put up a rolling screen of this, and then people started emailing me these. And then we hit social media, and they started sharing more directly, particularly on Twitter. They would at me, and then I would start retweeting them. And this also became a slight has become a slight public service, particularly when it's a rail service. Normally, somebody from the rail company will say, "What's the problem? Which station did you see this at?" So it's kind of a public service. Yeah, but then people started calling them Kevlin Henney screens, or at Kevlin Henney screens, and it made its way into the Urban Dictionary. Somebody put it in there as, there it is. It's a failure. It's a public screen failure, typically. So, yes, my name is associated with failure.
Okay.
That's impressive.
Yeah, I know.
Wow. How do I feel about that?
So I think that brings me to the theme I wanted to cover today, is that you have a sort of fondness for broken things, I have my gut feeling. And Stefan, you have opinions on at least parts of the web being broken, so maybe you can explain what your thoughts on current state of the web is?
Yeah, I think what happened over the last, I don't know, I started doing web development like 10 years ago, and I started with PHP, jQuery, an Apache server, that was pretty much it. Everything was on the server side. But somehow the industry over the last 10 years, over the last decade, made it that JavaScript, hipster JavaScript developers like yours truly here, took over the world. But also what we did is we increased complexity and things that we ship to all our users tremendously. And as we covered kind of these broken screens that are everywhere, very often what we see right now is that people are building applications and websites that are, first of all, shipping double the size of what they need to ship. It is like shipping HTML, but also half a megabyte of JavaScript. Just repeat yourself again to build the same thing. And then we also have the problem that, for example, JavaScript is not a fail-safe language. If something happens on the network or an exception is thrown, you can ship all your HTML, and then you have this blank screen. You saw some HTML, but it just falls, everything falls apart. And I think somehow we messed it up over the last 10 years. And I hope that we're swinging back eventually to building something good.
Yeah. Do you think we are swinging back? Are we making, like, have we hit the rock bottom and are slowly trying to climb our way back up?
I do think that the big factor here is web performance. So I'm more annoyed about the complexity that we're shipping, because I see a lot of people entering the industry and they're like, they're learning like, hey, yeah, great React app, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and they start building things. But when you ask one question, people are usually stuck because they don't understand what they're actually doing. This is what kind of frustrates me a little bit. And it's not the fault of the people. It's just where we are at right now. For the complexity reason, things probably won't change. But what is happening right now is that Google is pushing for the last 3, 4, 5 years with Lighthouse, with the Google search results, just for performance metrics that are affecting your bottom line as a business. So when you ship 0.5 megabyte of JavaScript, well, eventually you will be punished for that. So, and this is why I think that we're slowly seeing that people are like, well, maybe we don't need that much stuff, because you want to be on the first page on the Google search results. And if you're not, that's a big problem.
Okay. What about you, Kevlin? Do you think that we're moving in the right direction?
I'm not entirely convinced, but I can see I think it's a complex system. There's a number of factors at play. The question is which one wins out. There are lots of things nudging. And Stefan mentioned this really good point about complexity. It's something that really bugs me. I see it in back-end systems. I see it in the front-end stuff. It's just like, well, what's all this stuff doing here? Why do we need this?
Exactly.
Do you understand what you have? And when you ask people, when I talk about dependencies and dependency management, one of the simplest things I say is like, okay, you think you understand your dependencies, but you know, when I ask you what your dependencies are, you actually miss out half of them, because you're saying, well, there's a bunch of stuff we got from NPM, and then your horizon stops there. And it's just like, no, that's where the real story begins. That's where your vulnerabilities begin. That's where your surprises begin. Do you truly understand what you bring in? And I had one JavaScript developer say to me, he's like, well, do you mean I have to understand it all? I said, yeah, if you want to say we understand our application, we know what it is that is running, and therefore we are aware from a security point of view. I think that's one of the most interesting ones. Mm. We have been building up complexity and not paying directly for it, but we are seeing the consequences of it. And it's code bloat, it's surprising failures. When people come to improve performance, they don't know what they're looking at. The bigger something is, the harder it's going to be to performance tune. You know, you really don't know what you're looking at. And we have made it more complex than is necessary, which draws on our time, or it makes us go, yeah, whatever. So we're not going to look at that. But also it has implications. It has implications for maintenance. It has implications not just for performance and security. It has implications for, as it were, the evolution, the agility of the code base. We often, agility is a word that has often been hijacked, but that's the thing that we want, is we want to keep our software soft. The agility I'm referring to is that simple dictionary definition. You want to be able to do something quickly and easily. If something changes direction, can I reflect my change of understanding in the code? Can I do that quickly? And if the answer is no, this is like turning an oil tanker, rather than no, we're going to flip around on a skateboard, then my software has lost its softness. It's no longer soft, it's hard. And so that has consequences for the business. So we see that the effects are kind of all over the place. That also tells us what the forces are. If you're not going to be where you are on the search engine rankings, then you might feel inclined to change that. If you are going to be more frequently exposed to security issues, you might want to change that. If you are aware of the fact that perhaps your development is decelerating through this aggregated complexity, you might want to change that. I think all of those forces are there. It's just which ones are kind of dominant. And I don't think it takes much to tip us in the right direction, but I don't know that we're there yet.
Yeah, I agree. I think the dependency part is an interesting one. 2 weeks ago, I read something that really resonated with me, and it was like, if you're installing a dependency, you should be willing and able to debug what's going on. And in my ecosystem, which is the NPM JavaScript ecosystem, you install one dependency and you have undescribable mess on your machine.
Yeah, the phrase I heard was for this one years ago from Michael Stahl at Siemens was, you reach for the banana, you get the whole gorilla.
you get everything. And the question is, where are we going with that? Because security is a bigger thing. So I will quote later statistics that all the websites out there, 60% of them are actually shipping with security vulnerabilities. And it's just because the ecosystem right now is package for developers, at least in my ecosystem. It's mean I can make a lot of ground in 10 minutes. I just install 10 packages and can move it along and ship it, right?
Yeah.
But if people are not updating it and not understanding what they're doing, I think there's a big risk in, well, not shipping good things to the web.
Yeah. So who do you think has the responsibility for this? Is it individual developers, or is it NPM, the package managers? Is it the Java ecosystem at large?
I don't think there's an easy answer to that. I think ultimately everybody has some kind of responsibility. And I think certainly from a tool vendors and site providers have some kind of responsibility because they're providing a user experience, in essence. They're not simply... I actually find, interesting enough, that our language has devalued the value of certain things. We often refer to things as like, oh, that's just a repository. It's a repo. A repository is a place you dump stuff. I want something a little more active and intelligent. Somebody's providing me with a code service. I want to think of it like that point of view. And therefore, as a developer, I'm going to have an experience. I am a user of that, and therefore, what's my user experience? So I think it provides all along the chain. You can't be responsible for everything, but there's something you can probably add or a question you could ask that perhaps you didn't ask before. And collectively, again, it's these little nudges. I think that could make a bigger difference. I don't want to say you, the developer, are responsible for everything, but because of the way that we structure things... if you like, these days, with all of the dependencies, perhaps we should look at things from the point of view of supply chains and supply lines. And there is somebody who's going to be more customer-facing than everybody else. And unfortunately, at one level, the buck does stop with them. Because when, as a customer, I say, hey, look, I've got this problem. In fact, I actually have this with where I live. Occasionally, it gets incorrectly classified. You know, the postal address. It's a very small thing. The postal address. I get listed as living in a county that ceased to exist at the end of the 20th century. It has not existed for a quarter of a century. But there is no county of Avon. But I live in Bristol, and occasionally I'll get. You know, and then you kind of contact and say, by the way, you know, your data's not up to date. You know, that county doesn't exist. That's not a real county. And they say, oh, well, that's from our data provider, as if it's not their problem. But this is the... It's just like, no, it is your problem. I'm getting a service from you, and you're telling me you don't have good data. That's what I'm hearing. What else is not good? So at one level, there's a confidence thing. But another level is, unfortunately, you do kind of have to take some responsibility there. So I think if we just were able to move the needle from zero to something, don't worry about, like, we've all got to be responsible for everything. If we could just move it a little, I think that would make a significant difference.
Yeah, I do agree that it's probably also engineering culture in certain companies.
Yeah.
It is. If I work, typical software as a service company, right? There are 50 to 100 engineers. I won't move the needle. But it is kind of lobbying for, hey, we want to ship less dependencies. We want to update everything. We want to have good security in place. We want to have a good user experience. And these kind of things have to be decided collectively so that everybody is moving into the same direction.
It moves it from the individual. I think that's a really important point because that's also where we learn. That's one of the great things that humans... We learn by imitation. It's one of our great strengths and our great weaknesses, but, you know, it gives us useful stuff like, you know, civilization and writing systems and stuff like that. This imitation.
Numbers,
you know. So we were talking about numbers beforehand. These things, they're not always perfect, but that's how they get spread through. And that's how cultural osmosis. And that's also one of the most important things about how to, and you see it in very positively in some locations, is if a developer starts working there, they acquire certain habits, not through conscious effort, but because of the culture. But the opposite can also be the case. So therefore, there is a collective sense. It's not an individual can try and swim against the tide, but really the question is, like, if you have the right culture, then that's going to lead to this, the raising questions about systems and just moving things gently in a different direction. But yeah, there's the human bit. Now, the thing is, we love to point at code and our, you know, here's a box, it depends on this box, let's work on these things. But it's all the fuzzy stuff, the people stuff. We are the most complex system. In any software system, it's the humans that are the most complex system. If we keep pointing at that going, that's really hard. So, yeah, you should see what's on this side of the keyboard.
For sure. I do think, though, it's a lot about education. And this is why conferences like this probably matter. Because this conversation inside of these teams, inside of companies, have to happen, right? I want to believe that we ship and we develop things with a good user experience. This is what I'm, at the end of the day, I'm paid to do, right? I'm paid to code things for certain people. And for that, we need to have a certain level of understanding. What does it actually mean? Does it mean that we ship new features quickly? Maybe. Does it mean that they're secure? Maybe. But all these kind of things have to be on the radar of engineering managers, of developers. And this is where this cultural part comes into play, so that we are all running into the same direction.
Right. I think some of the arguments that I've seen is that maybe the building blocks that we use very frequently should have more responsibility. So I think what happens right now is that you start a React application or a Vue application, any framework of the week, you unknowingly get all of their dependency graph along for the ride, right, without necessarily knowing. And maybe they should be more responsible in implementing more things themselves instead of depending on things that depend on things that depend on things. So maybe having some kind of verification process that yes, this this particular framework has been a good citizen, so to speak.
Yeah, I think that that makes a certain amount of sense. But I think also we also have within reach the same feedback loops that allow that, because a lot of these things are indeed open source, and so therefore there is a feedback loop there. And one of the points I made in my talk was the people often talk about this idea of like, we learn from failure, we learn from our mistakes. Actually, we don't. History suggests that this is not as common as it should be. We can learn from them. That's a different statement. But that requires a little bit of effort. Sometimes we have to go in and go, oh, I wonder what we could do to change this. And one of the examples I didn't include today was the left pad incident in 2016.
That's a good one.
You know, it's because it's a good one because it's a textbook. It's very, very simple to run through and see the chain reaction of effect go into play. And it raises many, many different questions. And I'm not entirely sure that we've all learned the lessons of that. In fact, many people, I mean, because of the growth rate of JavaScript programmers, the statistic is something, you know, the number of people who are currently programming JavaScript is however many times more than actually know about the NPM event, left pad event in 2016. And that's a really simple public example that reveals many, it's not subtle, it's not, you know, there's not a complex case study here. It's really simple, and it kind of highlights like, yeah, we should be more aware of, you know, deploying things not quite as dynamically. You shouldn't pull it off the way. You should say, here is what actually goes live. We control the boundaries of this. But also within that, saying, how clean are our dependencies here? And, you know, what are we pulling in? Are we pulling something in that is actually a simple coding problem that could be, in other words, try and have our frameworks and our services offer the things that are the hard things and not just try and pull in small bits just because it adds a dependency. It's like, actually, you know, that's a simple coding problem. That could have been done in there. It could have been self-contained. And that idea, I think, is simple self-containment. You know, you don't want to end up with we provide you the whole platform and everything was written by us. So somewhere between these two extremes lies where we probably want to be. Yep. And that's enough that a developer could individually say, I can account for our dependencies. I know what we are running. Yeah. And that, which is a simple statement like that, would be, I think, such a great move. I know what we are running. That level of knowledge, then I think we're most of the way to, you know, heading in the right direction.
Totally. I was discussing that with the maintainer of the Preact framework 2 years ago. So Preact is this React alternative, just a little bit, same API, a little bit lightweight. And I was just building a side project, and what did I do, right? I used Cloudflare workers, set up a JavaScript framework, I got into this whole tech bubble, installing everything, and then I was like, what are you doing? All you need is a hamburger button that opens something and closes something, right? And you spend already 3 days crafting this software here, right, for this hamburger button. And I started chatting with the maintainer of Preact, and he was like, yeah, well, Stefan, you're right. That's not a use case for this framework. And ideally, eventually, we as framework maintainers offer you a way to not think about that, but rather tell you, hey, look, you have interactivity, like two events. You don't need a framework here right now. And I think that hopefully, maybe that's a wish, right? Maybe we end up there that framework maintainers eventually will give the developers that have not much experience yet. And even for me, it took me a few days to realize that I'm doing entire nonsense here, right? So ideally, we come up with the solutions on the framework level because this is what people will do, right? NPM init, NPM install, whatever. And we won't change that. I don't think that that's going to change.
Yeah, I guess we have a tendency to reach for the most advanced tool possible. Like I guess the real world equivalent is like, I need to dig a hole in the ground. Let me go get the excavator, right?
Yeah, instead of starting with a shovel. General purpose thing. And I think that's something that that's a story we tell ourselves. Now, it was a point that I made in my talk just now. I sort of said, you know, we often talk about, you know, oh, yeah, yeah, we've got to generalize this and generalize that. I said, no, customers don't have general problems. They have very specific problems. They already have a universal computing machine. Here is a machine that can do anything. They don't want to do anything. They don't want it to be general. They want this to sell their products. They want this to register their users. They have a very specific, of all the universe possibilities, what they want you to code up is a narrowing of the possibilities so that it does this. That's not to say we cannot find generality within that, but so often we think the generality is the end goal rather than kind of like, okay, let's take it to what do they actually want and then take a step back and go, you know what, I've seen this before. Actually, this, the way I've written the code, I can simplify it. There's a generalization that I had missed previously. Again, that goes back to the softness of code. I want to give myself that opportunity. But people don't want general stuff, but we tell ourselves that they do. And so all the frameworks. And we go, yes, no. I'm all the scale. We're going to need all the scale. We're going to need all the, it's just like, maybe you will, but maybe you won't. And then what happened? What have you brought on board? What cost are you paying? There's a trade-off here. And I think that's the thing, is that with any trade-off, and this is, the English word trade-off actually works quite well here, but to the point it becomes invisible, we forget it's a trade. I trade something in order to get something else. So what's the quality? What is the thing you're giving me? If I trade simplicity of my code, or I trade the obviousness, in other words, I can, everything that you need is in this piece of code. Well, actually, no, some of it is brought in from outside. No, that's not yet a good thing or a bad thing. What's the trade? Oh, you know what? When we did this, it saved us so much trouble. We could deliver faster. We were shipping fewer bugs. We wrote less code to achieve the same thing. That seems like a good trade. You've moved the balance of the code a little bit outside your code base, a little bit outside your control, but you're trusting somebody else. And the benefit, oh, yeah, there's a clear trade. That's a good trade. The problem is I don't think we're doing that a lot. We're giving up an awful lot. And then when in return, it's like, well, what are you getting? Well, we're shipping half a megabyte of stuff with every simple request. We have no idea what our dependencies are. Yeah, we keep getting vulnerabilities reported. But the point is, I would call that a bad trade. It's like we give this and then more is taken. So in other words, I think it's that we really need to get into that word and say, oh, yeah, there is a trade. Every little decision is like, which side of the line does that fall? And what am I getting if I do this? And what am I getting if I don't? And that just pausing again to think of that. And we may say, you know, I'm not at this stage where I need the machinery of this framework. I can't justify that yet. And I can show something to a customer right now, and it's going to be good enough for our conversation at the moment. And maybe they've got visions of scaling in a couple of years' time and all the rest of it. But let's just build up. Let's see. Let's sense our way. You know, pay attention to what we're doing. And there may come a point that nudges us and say, you know what? Now is the time. And maybe the framework we had in mind is not the one that we should be doing. There's something else that solves that more specifically. So it's just, I guess all I'm saying is slow down. We need to learn to slow down.
And be aware. I like the idea of a trade. Yeah. It's like, sit down, consider your options, and don't go necessarily always with the default path. Don't go with the latest and greatest, the cutting edge thing. Maybe it's not needed at that moment in time.
Right.
Yeah. And maybe you don't have the skills to deal with it. Yeah. What I see a lot of times is just people just want to play with tech, right? Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. But maybe not when it's a commercial product that is going to customers. Yeah. Maybe that's not the right situation.
I think that idea, the trade is also something that its value changes with time. What was a good trade-off last year may not be right now. That doesn't mean you were wrong last year.
Yeah.
It just means that this... So I think we like the idea that it's a simple thing. It's like, oh, like we took a decision and that decision is somehow timeless and forever. And it's just like, no, actually, the world has changed around it in technology, but also in the business. And, you know, that was a good, that piece of code was good for the world it lived in, and that world's moved on. And I think that's we take a very simplistic view. I see it when people are talking about kind of unmanaged technical debt or legacy code. Half the time they're saying the code is bad. And it's just like, actually, no, it isn't bad. It was good, but it's not it that has become bad. It's the world that's moved around it, and the code has stayed in the same place. Mm. The trade-offs that it made are no longer valuable. Yeah. You know, somebody did certain things, and I deal a lot with people sort of at the back end and where, you know, the nanoseconds and the megabytes matter a lot. And so there's all kinds of trades we make at various points that just a few years later, it's like, yeah, we've got more memory. We've got multi-core. It was only quad-core when we wrote the original code. But now all of this stuff, it's changed the landscape. And all of those trade-offs, we did every single thing for the right reason. They no longer matter, but they add complexity to the code. That's the cost we're paying. And we're paying. We're not getting anything in return. So it doesn't mean it was a bad decision. It just means we need, again, it goes back to that awareness. It's just like you've got to watch out that the things that you thought were solid, they may may not be. You know,
anymore. Maybe not. Maybe it was good like a few years ago, but maybe there are better solutions now.
Yeah. So you know, I mean, before I came to Denmark this week, I can tell you that in my fridge there is some yogurt. Okay. There is some yogurt. Now that yogurt, when I left, was good. When I return home, it is entirely possible that I may need to throw that yogurt out. Now, the point is, that doesn't mean it wasn't good. It doesn't mean it never had value. But there is a point, and we are used to this in other walks of life. We things go off. You know, they have a best before or a sell by date. We even have it with some of our devices and our technology. You know, credit cards have an expiry date, and so on. We have the idea that something is not always forever. That there's an opportunity that we may want to revisit it. And I don't think we have that idea with code or decisions. The idea that decision was good, maybe we want to revisit that because, you know, the nature of the business, the nature of the technology around it, the ecosystem we've drawn in may make this no longer relevant, and it may make it actually a problem. And we should think that that is normal rather than, just accumulate. It goes back to what you were saying, that people accumulate. And again, that's a cultural thing. They learn to add. I think a lot of what we are missing is the art of removal. And it exists in other parts of our lives. So it's not like we don't know how to do it. I think we just haven't framed that in the software space.
I think that's a good point, and I very much agree with you that I think it's a good habit to be deliberate about the dependencies you do take on. A metaphor I usually think about that might be fitting, might not, is that taking on the dependencies a little bit like adopting a puppy. That, like, you should consider, do I want to look after a puppy? Is it potty trained? Will I need to put it down eventually? And instead of just needlessly adding dependencies, think about the trade-off, like you mentioned.
Yeah. You're describing very explicitly there is a sense of responsibility. And it's not to say, and people get puppies because, you know, they're looking for a certain kind of enjoyment.
Yeah.
But there's another side to that. There is this other aspect. You've got to look after it. And I think that's, this code, if we use this framework, that's going to save us this much time. But what is the other cost? And if anybody ever tries to sell you something and they never give you any liabilities, or what I tend to think of as boundaries. Every good idea has a boundary.
Yeah.
It's not universally good. There is a point at which you cross and you go, this is no longer the right thing. This advice, or this, you know, I apply it to advice as well as to code. This advice does not apply universally. It has a boundary. Inside here, it's really good. That's what makes it good advice. Yeah. Outside it, we wouldn't apply it. So where is our question should always be is, at what point does this become a burden? What is the trade that we're making? There's lots of these things there, but they're all awareness. They're checks and balances.
How much of this do you think comes from our profession sort of being afraid of duplication? I think, at least in the JavaScript ecosystem, I have the impression that people are afraid of duplicating themselves in code. Like they feel like if I write the same code twice, that's a bad thing. So someone else wrote that code, I should take in and use that instead. I think a really famous, horrible example I've seen is that there's a JavaScript dependency called isEven that checks for whether a number is even or not. Then you have the equivalent isOdd that depends on isEven so that it can negate that condition. So do you think that we as an industry are too afraid of duplication? Is that a bad thing to write the same code twice? And how does that tie in with taking on too many dependencies because we don't want to write code that someone else has already written?
It probably depends, I would say. I think JavaScript is a little bit of a unicorn in that sentence, in this context, because it just evolved so much in the last 5 to 6 and 7 years. And there's so many new people coming in, so that a lot of people don't know how to write the best code, right? Do I refactor things? Do I install a dependency? How do I structure a JavaScript code base? These are also not trivial questions. We only have a module system now in JavaScript that comes in browsers for a few years. Before that, it was a wild, wild west, and people were reinventing and kind of inventing JavaScript patterns. JavaScript is also a very dynamic language. For other programming languages, I'm not sure, but I think the NPM ecosystem is a tricky one because there are so many new people that are just developing new things, and they're trying to give their best, and they install isEven maybe because they just came from a JavaScript course yesterday.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, and I can't speak, I always consider myself a JavaScript tourist rather than a JavaScript programmer. So I can't say that I know a great deal about the JavaScript culture, except that I do see plenty of duplication. There's no shortage of duplication. I think that with any culture, you're going to get certain extremes, and people will learn by imitation. You know, if I've come off, if somebody said NPM is the center of the universe, everything you need is there. And then I'm sitting there, so this is how they do it. Because normally you want to fit in. If you're new to a culture, you want to fit in. You want to do the things the other people are doing.
Yeah,
so
sure.
It's very natural. That's just a human instinct. So we're going to follow that. But I also see in other cases, we seem to inhabit both extremes. It's like we are both afraid of duplication and overdo it. You know, we seem to exist. We don't seem to have a kind of coherent story about that. And so therefore we see both at the same time. You know, I've seen a code base. It was a server side one years ago. Very performance sensitive, very memory sensitive. It was a C++ code base. And I started noticing this code feels really familiar. And I started thinking, it must be the jet lag, you know. It must be the jet lag, you know. And I just mentioned something, haven't we already seen this code? I said, no. We've got the same thing in however many places, and it's like being copy and pasted all over the place. It's like, maybe that's not a good idea. There's an opportunity that we can take advantage of. And yet in the same system, they made something incredibly complex because they even said, we don't want to duplicate that. And it's just like, you're the same people that did all of this. So we're almost, embrace this paradox. It's like this idea, like sometimes we concentrate on one thing so hard, we can't see we're contradicting ourselves in another case. And so I think we both, and I don't think it's just different systems. Sometimes it can be the same people who are both duplicating and they're making something complex because they're trying too hard to eliminate duplication. But probably they're concentrating on one, they don't notice the other. I think it's a difficult one, and I think that's an area where tooling can certainly help us, and a more deliberate approach to reviewing where people do, that episode where I was pointed out, we do this a lot of times. What it needs is for somebody to go, that's interesting. Why are we doing it? Why are we duplicating it everywhere? Why is this? Is this necessary? Not everything that is duplicated is necessarily bad.
Yeah.
It's just that it should raise a question. Did we mean to do that? It goes back to the deliberation. It's like, I'm making a decision here to duplicate this. What is my justification? And that is just a simple, it's a simple hesitation, a pause, a question that one person can ask of another. And I think that kind of goes back to this other idea, again, we were talking about this individual versus collective aspect, is group intelligence. That is humanity's strength. We also are remarkably good at group stupidity and groupthink. Yes. We are capable both at the same time. But a software development team, you can't know everything. Software is so complex, the ecosystems, but also the domains that we're deploying them in. But that's why you have people. Yeah. People plural, not just one. You have group intelligence. And so perhaps we're not making the best use of... there's more than one brain on this team, and that other brain can probably see things that I simply can't see, no matter what I call myself senior or whatever. And so perhaps we need to get a little better at that group intelligence aspect. And I think that's the duplication, that answers the duplication question, because when we bring our collective intelligence to bear, we go like, yeah, we're trying too hard over here, and actually there's no benefit to this. We've only used it in one place. But over here, under the radar, we've got all this duplication, this same piece of control flow, that we now got to touch in multiple places because we've changed our minds about something. And what we're going to do is rather than taking a step back going, I wonder why that's the case, I wonder if we can consolidate that, what we're going to do is say, right, I will do the 50, I will touch the code in 50 places before lunch, and I will focus on getting that done, rather than, hang on, there's something deep going on here, I wonder what that is.
Yeah. It comes back to I really like the idea of trades, right? If you have a bigger team and one person decides today to copy and paste certain lines and just change one thing, leave a comment there because you have to shift tomorrow. There are reasons there, but this person may or may not be aware at that moment in time, I'm trading something around. I have to ship tomorrow. I'm not refactoring 50 places and in the entire code base right now, here and now. But it comes to this awareness part, and you briefly touched tooling, and I think tooling is a big, big part of that. It should be your linters, your something telling you, hey, you have the same five signatures across these files. Should you do something around that? And tooling plays a big, big role in these kind of awareness things to keep the quality high. But just saying duplication is bad all the time, I think it's the usual, it depends.
Yeah. It's not enough to point that out. It's interesting. Duplication is interesting. And the whole thing with tools, there's a book that I edited a few years ago, 97 Things Every Programmer Should Know. And there was a couple of things in there that are interesting, because we had both the advice to don't repeat yourself. We had the drive principle in there. Steve Smith wrote that piece. And then we had another piece from Udi Dahan, Beware the Share, where he talked about an episode where he had removed duplication and it had caused problems. Mm-hmm. So, in other words, we had had a counterbalance in there, and because it raises both questions. In other words, you should be asking these questions. It's not a always do this, never do that. It's and it depends, and we're going to show you what it depends on. But there was another piece where Keith Braithwaite talked about this idea of the tooling and the idea of historically, as human beings, we extend ourselves. You know, a nail. This is not a good way of driving a nail in, but if I extend the idea of my arm with a hammer, then suddenly, and that's what tools are, they're extensions of us that allow us to do things. And perhaps sometimes I think we approach tooling, we don't approach tooling with the right mindset in software development. They are extensions of the things that we desire and want. You know, I don't want the tool to tell me what to do, but I want it to point out things that I'm going to miss. I can only see so many things. I have incomplete knowledge and I'm never going to have complete knowledge. I would like something that helps me with that. I would like something that helps me work with my colleagues. I would like something that says, you know what, you do have those five signatures. Is this something you care about? And then I would like another tool to say, okay, here are your options. But you are still driving. You are making that decision, and you're aware of that. But also you as human beings, we can relate to one another. And it's just like, maybe I'm not sure. And I go and ask you, and I say, well, you know, what do you think? I've not seen this before. I'm not familiar with this code base. And that is the bit that it's very, very soft, but it's the bit that is kind of the driver. And I think sometimes we don't concentrate on that. It's very easy to say, here is a framework solution. Here is the thing. This will solve all of your problems. We use this. Nobody ever puts on the CV, oh, yeah, we use people power. We use people stuff. We use talking. We use whatever it is. And that's the kind of superpower that we have. There's all these things. And our tools are supposed to help us reach further than we simply can. You know. And it would just be nice if we recognize that, whereas we seem to think tools define the way of working. They are the universe. So, no, they extend human reach. You know, it still comes back to us.
Yeah, and I think just to weigh in a little bit on the duplication part, I think my preference these days, I think, is to start with duplication and then see where that takes me, because often I find that abstracting things too early is more harmful. Like it's harder to back out of the wrong abstraction than it is to abstract something that was duplicated. And usually it's only once I've duplicated things a few times that I start to see where the abstraction actually is. Yeah. So I think my usual approach is like start duplicating things, and when I'm about to write the same thing for the third time, that's when I know enough to actually do the proper abstraction. And I think people might have an aversion to doing that. They think that, oh, I should never repeat myself. It's not good.
I think the challenge is that our challenge is to learn what is it that is being repeated. And as you say, it's that idea that sometimes the first time we encounter it, we can make an observation, but we can't yet make a judgment. We can make an observation, huh, that's interesting. I don't know why it's interesting. I don't know the way in which... In fact, an example from a codebase a few years ago, I introduced an abstraction, and then I started thinking, this doesn't feel quite right. It was a token, and it was just... And I thought, it doesn't feel... Okay, I'm just going to replace that with a string. So I had and I just went back to a string. And then after a few more days, I started seeing the repetition gathering around the string, the way that it was being used. It's like, and now I understand. So I reintroduced a class called token. But, you know, you might say, well, you put it back in again. Well, no, I didn't. I put something with the same name in, but now its interface was completely different because now I'd seen how I was using it. In other words, it's like you have an idea. You sense there is something here, but I'm not yet sure what it is. I don't yet know enough to commit to the sharp lines of a curly bracket. But, you know, there's something. I'm going to keep my eye on that. And it's exactly that. You know, the fact that I put something in prematurely, took it out, string, and then there's a recognition. Now I see. Now I understand. I did not understand before. I knew I needed a thing, but I didn't know what the shape of that thing was yet. Mm. You kind of need to let time answer your question for you. And we're not very good at that because we think we make that decision. It's good forever, and it's just like no. Give it a week. Give it a couple of weeks. See how this one plays out. But you've kind of got your eye on it. You've got a watch on it. Just as we have watches in debuggers, maybe we should have. You know, we need to have that in the development time as well. It's just like I'm going to keep my eye on this. I think there's something here, but I don't know what to call it yet.
Yeah.
I mean, I completely agree. I think we're getting close to the end, so I'm wondering if any of you have anything last-minute questions you want to ask each other, maybe? Anything Or maybe you saw a funny Kevlin Henney on the way here. What was the last Kevlin Henney you saw?
Oh, I've been tweeted a couple this morning.
Okay. It's a very...
A lot of these are actually operating system startup screens, supermarkets are increasingly popular these days.
Right, with all the self-checkouts, that must cost some new...
That's a really good opportunity for that one. Actually, in my experience from the hotel to here, I did not see anything.
Only construction.
Lots of that.
All the issues I dealt with are real world issues. It's like Google Maps say go this way. That's not happening. As I messaged my wife,
world
I said,
was this, broken screen.
This area will be really nice when it's finished.
Yeah. What about you? Did you see any Kevlin Henneys on the way?
I don't think so, but I will definitely check them out right after our conversation here.
Okay.
See if I can bring some into my talk later.
That'd be fun. It has been a pleasure talking to you, so I just want to say thank you for taking the time.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the GoTo Podcast. Head over to gotopia.tech to discover lots more content from the brightest minds in software development.